Best life. Yeah, yeah.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Here's the other surprising part.
With guest host Brian Weber.
Yeah, big shoes to fill. Eisen's a legend.
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles. The Rich Eisen Show.
Do you know who I am? I'm a guy on television. I have my own show.
And now, sitting in for Rich, here's Brian Weber.
It's another hour of the program, and it's great to have you with us as we get you set for the long holiday weekend. But because Rich is in the customer service business, a lot of programs play tape, a lot of best ofs you might hear on a holiday coming up on Monday. I'm back with you on Memorial Day, and we will do it live, 844-204-7424, the number to call. You can get involved on the X platform. That's BW Weber, Weber with two B's. Tried not to overwhelm you with all NBA in the first hour. The goal is to be interactive and also have a balanced program. So we did a little Scottie Scheffler, a good chunk of the Cowboys. Coming up, this is going to be more basketball focused. Devoted the opening monologue to our takeaways from Boston's lopsided victory last night over the Pacers. If Tyrese Halliburton cannot go, stick a fork in Indiana, even though they've shown remarkable resolve already in this postseason. Still, there's a reason why the Celtics have the best record, clearly, in the regular season with the 64 wins, 14 victories better than the 2-seed New York. Coming up in just a couple minutes, we'll make the move to Dallas and Minnesota, and then we'll back that up in 20 minutes, back that thing up when we take you across the NBA postseason, talk about the coaching openings that now include Washington, Los Angeles, and Cleveland after J.B. Bickerstaff got whacked yesterday. When we check in with Kurt Heelan, lead NBA writer for NBC Sports, in 40 minutes, a massive and long overdue change has arrived in college sports. We will give you analysis as to what revenue sharing for the players is going to mean beyond the fact that it is a century overdue. But a preview is the rich, not surprisingly, are about to get richer. That is coming up. Quick footnote to our thoughts on Dak Prescott and the Dallas Cowboys. And OTAs really are mostly now beyond what the players are doing. And all these guys keep their bodies, their moneymakers, in exceptional conditioning, as you know. It's not like back in the day when they would sell tires in the offseason because they needed another source of income. But as players are gathering for these voluntary workouts, and then we got mandatory minicamps coming up, really is about media access to the biggest names in football. I mentioned Daniel Jones coming back from the torn ACL in passing. And the Giants were the team of my youth a million years ago. So perhaps I'm biased when I kick them when they're down, because typically they have been down, with the outliers of the Parcells era and then Eli playing out of his mind not once but twice, as we were reminded of many times during the Tom Brady roast. Giants seem to be in a dysfunctional cycle again, and I know they made the playoffs just a couple of years ago, but you saw them fall off the cliff last year because Daniel Jones is just a guy. And I realized the motivation to pay him, because they thought internally Brian Daboll had coached them up so much that he had put together a new start in his career. You saw what happened last year in addition to the knee injury. Daniel Jones, asked by the rugged New York media what his reaction to the speculation around the draft regarding the Giants that they were targeting a quarterback with their top 10 pick, Jones said, quote, today, he wasn't fired up. Danny Dimes, he's a competitor. You're going to have to rip that starting job out of his cold, dead hands. Have you looked at the Giants' depth chart? Do you know who's backing up Daniel Jones these days? Drew Locke and the great Tommy DeVito is floating around there as well. The Italian Stallion. 844-204-7424 is the phone number. Let's talk Dallas and Minnesota. Kyrie Irving has been a baffling, puzzling, and at times reprehensible person verbally and repost. And I don't need to go through the full litany of some of the more objectionable content that he has been connected with. And perhaps he has matured along the way. Now, if we're just talking about goofy nonsense like the world is flat, that's one thing. If we're now venturing into territory of anti-Semitic tropes, that's very different. However, this is a sports program, and I'm not just going to stick to sports, even though I'm the guest host and should be mindful of my role. Stay in your lane, as a radio boss told me many years ago, and thankfully I'm still working, and he's in early retirement. But you have to objectively at least acknowledge we have not spoken, or as a consumer of sports media like you, watching fine shows like this. It is the Rich Eisen Show. I'm Brian Weber, and I'm coming to you from the Rich Eisen Show desk, furnished by Grainger, here on the Rich Eisen Show Radio Network, with supplies and solutions for every industry. Grainger has the right product for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Kyrie Irving has not said one thing this year. Just back it up. Go back to the deal last year. Dallas picks him up. It doesn't work out. He and Luka do not look in synchronicity at all. Now, they missed the playoffs, but remember, context matters. And I love the NBA. I shouldn't say this too loudly, but I love the NBA as much as the NFL. And stylistically, I prefer to watch basketball than football because, quote unquote, I'm a basketball guy. Don't need to read my resume. But go back to last year. Dallas not only kind of tanked, they completely tanked. They went into Operation Shutdown the last two games of regular season to protect their draft possibilities. It worked out in a major way because they held on to the pick and they flipped it into Duke center, Derek Lively. And if you've been paying any attention to Dallas, among the reasons why they're back in the Western Conference Finals for the second time in 3 years is their defense, especially on the interior. And Nico Harrison, their fine GM, made a couple of sneaky good deals prior to the deadline. Pick it up. Another big in Daniel Gafford and P.J. Washington, who for some reason devoured OKC at times in the last round of the playoffs. This is a very different roster for Dallas. Undeniably, the best collection of talent that Luka has ever had around him, and we know he's going to win an MVP one of these years, finished third in the balloting this year. But the bet was not only trading for Kyrie, but then re-upping with the contract extension. The bet was it's going to work between Kyrie and Luka, which seemed like a long shot. And we know these adages exist because there's a degree of truth. There's only one basketball to go around. Two ball-dominant guards. How would it work? Didn't work that well last year, small sample size. And then Dallas decided to pull the plug to avoid losing their draft pick, or at least having an enhanced possibility of blowing that scenario. Well, this year, A, we've not heard a single thing from Kyrie that's not basketball-related. And I'm not telling players they can't express their opinions. As a sidebar, and I am Roman Catholic. I don't know why we still say Roman Catholic. I'm Catholic. I don't agree with anything Harrison Butker said. Not one single thing he said. But I do at least understand his right to express those thoughts. At the same time, if you're going to share your views, be prepared for forceful pushback, especially if it's going to be controversial, like what Harrison said. Kyrie is allowed to express any thoughts he wants to. The problem was it had become so defining of Kyrie, in addition to a leveling off, if not decline, of his play on the court. Well, fast forward to this year. I cannot think of, and perhaps I'm wrong, I am not omniscient, though that's a big word on a Friday. I am not all-knowing and all-powerful like Oz. Tell me something I'm overlooking, 844-204-7424, or you can slide in on the X. BW Weber, Weber with two Bs in 15 minutes. We continue the NBA conversation with Kurt Heelan of NBC Sports. Kyrie, just as a observer, seems to have made it all about basketball. Life is a series of choices. Hadn't said anything this year. Secondarily, he and Luka, just as a guy who pays close attention, and I watch a lot of NBA, I'm not a huge sit-through-a-game person anymore. You TikTok people have ruined me. I have an even shorter attention span than I did growing up in the MTV generation. But I'll put on NBA TV and ride that thing all night long, baby, during the regular season, watching Kyrie and Luka play. It's clear they both bought in, and they both decided, if this is going to work, we have to make it coalesce. So, props to Kyrie and Luka to an extent. Remember, it's his team, but he fully understands in the modern NBA, you need at least two superstars and then a high-end role player. So let's call it 2 1/3 stars or 2 1/2 stars. The question for Dallas will be, who's that third option? And I'm not getting delusional to portray P.J. Washington as anything close to a star, but if you went back to the series against the Thunder, another team well ahead of schedule that we're going to be talking about for the next decade, they did not have an answer at times for P.J. Washington. And Dallas, if you're not paying attention, is playing solid defense, and that was certainly not the M.O. for Luka because of his amazing shot creativity abilities. This guy not only can hit a shot from anywhere on the floor, he comes up with angles that you wouldn't even think are possible. That's how much of a unicorn he is. Dallas is playing outstanding defense, led by Kyrie, who then decided, perhaps feeling slighted or challenged by Anthony Edwards, who basically said, yeah, I got Kyrie, and I want Kyrie coming up in the next round after their Game 7 victory in Denver. Kyrie certainly looked motivated, had that explosive first half, and when we got to the business end of Game 1, Luka and Kyrie both finished with better than 30 points. Dallas steals home court advantage. So Dallas, with the remnants of the team that made it to the Western Conference Finals a couple of years ago, and also you got to give credit to Jason Kidd, especially with a guard-dominated roster, who better to identify with those guys than a Hall of Fame point guard, one of the best players of his generation, going back to his comet-like one-and-done year at Cal as a Bay Area native. Contrast that to a Minnesota team that is making their first deep run in the playoffs for 20 years. So I think get caught up sometimes with simplistic descriptors of teams. So when I said young OKC, well, that's fair. You just look at the overall mean and age of the roster led by SGA, and then Chet Holmgren coming back after last year was wiped out due to injury and everybody else they have on that team. Minnesota's not that young when you factor in Karl-Anthony Towns has been around and a veteran like Rudy Gobert. Mike Conley is 140 years old, and I'd say 140 as his net worth, but I'd be light. Mike Conley, throw that in your Google machine, is the poster boy for why it is really good to be an NBA player, and that's only going to get even bigger with these new media deals. And I'll save it for Monday, the early eulogies for the NBA on TNT and what a loss that's going to be. While it doesn't necessarily mean the end of Inside, because as Charles Barkley foreshadowed the other day on the Dan Patrick Show, and obviously Dan and Rich have a great relationship personally and professionally, in the modern media landscape, who's to say Barkley, Kenny, and Shaq, if they don't do a deal with another massive media conglomerate, NBC or Amazon in this case, they will not go to ESPN, I would think, unless ESPN finally smartened up. They could do their own thing on YouTube. The Pat McAfee model has worked. The Rich Eisen model continues to work. Betting on yourself with this radio-only show today and the phenomenal simulcast most days on the Roku channel. So let's not say goodbye to that studio team just now, although it looks like Ernie Johnson's probably going to stay with Turner as a lifer in Atlanta. But as we think about how things could play out moving forward for Dallas and Minnesota, I want to see tonight shot selection by the T-Wolves. I realize the current landscape of the NBA is all about the three-point shot, and I understand that the Warriors changed everything, and analytics says keep chucking up the threes because if you make just enough of them, you're going to have a big numerical advantage based on the law of averages. The T-Wolves took 49 three-pointers. I looked it up because it seemed absurd watching the game in real time the other night. 49-4-3. Season high. 8 more than they had taken in any other game all season long. And it wasn't just that they were chucking up shots from beyond the arc. It was where the shots were being thrown up from. We're talking deep, deep threes, Steph Curry threes, and where they were in the shot clock. So I'm not pretending to be a coach, but they seemed out of sync. Maybe there was something truthful about what Anthony Edwards said postgame, that they were tired after game 7. Because remember, they have not been through, as a collective, the playoff wars before. And I realized they blew through the Suns. That's what cost Frank Vogel his job. One and done in the Valley of the Sun. But there's a learning curve emotionally and physically in the NBA postseason. That's why we rarely have a bolt out of the blue team emerge from nowhere and win it all. You got to pay your dues. You got to earn your bones. And there's a process to deep and sustained runs in the NBA postseason. So certainly expect Minnesota to bounce back tonight. But if we're just talking about it from a general thematic standpoint, Dallas is playing much better defense than people realize. And I understand you got to make shots to win games. Think about the East. Two highest scoring teams in all of basketball matching up in Boston and Indiana Pacers with the best regular season scoring average for decades. Up-tempo. Shoot 6, maybe 8 seconds into the shot clock. That's a big reason why they made the playoffs for the first time since 2020. But if we're thinking about the particulars of Dallas and Minnesota, Dallas certainly can continue to play freely since they've already ripped home court advantage away from Minnesota. You watch that game, it could have gone either way. But I do think it's worth repeating, this is Minnesota's first playoff run for this group. And they're going to continue to learn along the way. As much as I am enthralled with Anthony Edwards, like everybody else is, remember how young this guy is. He's only 22 years old. I love the fact that he's leaning in to being, along with SGA, one of the dominant young faces of this league. We know so long as LeBron wants to play, he's the alpha, but the future is bright for this league. If you just go from a general perspective, and I understand the NBA is better with dynasties because casual fans at least can identify with these organizations without having to pay that much attention to the players, the NBA has never had more parity, and we'll talk about it with Curt Hyland coming up. With Denver getting knocked out by Minnesota, we're going to have 6 consecutive years without a repeat champion. That has not happened in this league since the late 1970s. The league has never had more star power evenly distributed across the NBA and more competitive balance. That's why Minnesota is a phenomenal story, because when you got a guy who's about to turn 23, who is a transcendent talent, if they can keep this team together, think about what could be coming up in the next few years. Knowing that when you have these championship windows, and we'll mix sports metaphors here, we'll go back to Dan Campbell's postgame comments, which I thought were extremely candid when Detroit blew a massive opportunity against the 49ers in the NFC title game. Dan, because he is as transparent as anybody in all of sports, said, "We expect to be back here, but we know how tough it is to get down to the Final Four." So for Minnesota, the present is what they have to focus on. The future is now, as George Allen once said. Want to see more from Ant? I just enjoy saying Ant. Remember Game 7, he got bailed out by all people. Rudy Gobert's contributions after Barkley buried him at halftime. But Edwards was only 6-24 from the floor in Game 7. Only 19 points in the Game 1 loss to Dallas. And where was the Catman? Where was Karl Anthony Towns? He only had 16. Minnesota clearly has to be motivated by not wanting to fall behind 2-0 going to Dallas. I'm not telling anything you don't know with that observation, even though they've demonstrated they can win on the road in this postseason run. But if they looked at that tape, there were a handful of moments, had it gone their way, they win that game despite horrible shot selection and two subpar performances from two of their core talents on the team. I'm Brian Weber in for Rich Eisen. Coming up in 20 minutes, we'll talk about a monumental development in college sports. It's almost official. Players are about to get paid. What's that going to mean for an already increasingly divided college setup with the SEC and the Big Ten running everything? That is coming up, but straight ahead, we'll keep the NBA momentum going. Just talked about the West in detail, so we'll expand our focus. With Boston grabbing a 2-0 series lead over Indy last night, how much separation is there between the Celtics and everyone else left? We will take you across the NBA postseason when we check in with Kurt Heelan, NBA writer for NBC Sports. That's coming up. I'm Brian Weber, always having a good time with you, especially when I'm in for Rich. This is The Rich Eisen Show.
What's up, everyone? It's Reality Steve, your number one source for all things Bachelor Nation and reality TV. Every day, I'm giving you the behind-the-scenes juice and your info on all your Bachelor Nation stories and also interviewing some of your favorite reality stars. My name has been synonymous with spoilers, but I'm so much more than that. Give me a listen.
The Reality Steve Podcast, part of the Believe Network. Just search BLEAV on YouTube or wherever you listen. Afford Anything talks about how to avoid common pitfalls, how to refine your mental models, and how to think about how to think.
Paula, while certainly you can mess up on $1 million a year, it is far less likely than it is on $30,000 a year.
Right.
I would meet wonderful people that were struggling with a budget that was super tight. It was 100%. You need to make more money.
Make smarter choices and build a better life.
Afford Anything, wherever you listen.
Brian Weber back with you. Appreciate you spending part of your Friday as we ramp things up heading into the long holiday weekend. In for Rich and the guys, 844-204-7424, the number to call. You can access the program on social media. Hit me up on the X, BW Weber, Weber with two B's. Let's talk more NBA with an old friend, Kurt Heelan, lead NBA writer for NBC Sports. Kurt, it feels like if we're holiday adjacent, I am speaking with you, and I believe the last time we spoke was Christmas week, so how are you, my friend?
I'm doing well, man. This is the fun time of year to be a basketball writer, because the games matter, plus there's just a ton of silly rumors. So.
Yes, and we love the traffic in silly rumors, but let's start with the games, and unfortunately, injuries continue to be a huge element in this postseason. Yeah. I don't have to go through the whole list. If Tyrese Haliburton went down with something that's going to prevent him from playing game three, we know it's the same hamstring that sidelined him in December. Is Indiana effectively done as of now?
Yeah. I mean, let's be honest. They might be done anyway. This was a tough matchup for them. But any hope they had of going home and flipping this series around, remember, they were down 0-2, you know, to the Knicks and came back and won the series. Any hope they had of that goes away. Their offense, I mean, just last game, in that second quarter when, you know, the Celtics went on that, I think it ended up being a 17-0 run.
Yeah, 20-0 officially, 20-0.
Yeah. The first 12 of that in the second quarter were with Haliburton on the bench.
Mm-hmm.
Like, their offense just isn't the same without him out there. As much as Siakam's kind of been a problem and played really well, they just don't have enough shot creation. He makes his passing and his pace push everything they do, and they're toast without him.
Did you have any problem with Rick Carlisle resting his starters midway through the third?
That was just weird, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Like, it's the playoffs, man. Like, maybe you pull them a little early, like you get Siakam a little rest, but you're only down in a year of, like, massive comebacks, right? Like, all season long and through these playoffs, we've seen these huge double-digit comebacks. How do you, with 6 minutes to go in the game, not give it one more shot? Not put Siakam out there. It's a long shot, right? But put your guys out there. Put your best players out there. Try to make it happen for a couple minutes. If it doesn't come together, pull them with a few minutes to go, because you're going to have to throw everything in game three. They have to win game three. But I just don't I don't get not taking a swing. This isn't, man, this isn't the first night of a back-to-back in February.
I thought it was puzzling as well, although as you described and Carlisle alluded to it post-game, felt like he realized, especially if Halliburton can't go, his guys are going to have to play Knicks-like minutes, 45, 46, 48, maybe get them a little bit of rest. But I agree, it felt odd in the moment. Talking NBA with our good friend Kurt Heelan of NBC Sports. Am I being a little bit too of much of a nitpicker to point out that on a night in which Jaylen Brown looked like Larry Bird exploding for 40 with 24 in the first half, Jason Tatum only had 4 points in the first half? Kurt, I am not trying to create a false narrative here. I watch a lot of regular season NBA. There's a reason why Tatum earned first team All-NBA honors for the third straight year. But to me, if you're going to be a transcendent superstar, you can't have 4 points in any first half.
It's the weird thing about their dynamic. It's not, I don't know, I'll use LeBron and AD as an Anthony Davis as an example, where their games mesh and they play off each other and they lift each other up and they're both better because they're out there. And you can name a whole bunch of duos across the NBA where that's the case. Doesn't it feel like sometimes with Boston, I think they've gotten better at this, but it's still a little, I don't want to say your turn, my turn, but it's more, they play a similar game. And if Tatum's off, Brown steps up, and if Brown's struggling a little, it's Tatum who steps up. And it tends to be more that balancing than it does them lifting each other up. You just don't get that many games where they're both brilliant.
And that's my thought as well, although I certainly am getting a little critical when we're talking about a team that had 64 victories in the regular season.
And is rolling through everybody and is knocked down every challenge.
And doing it without Porzingis. So when Porzingis comes back, if he does come back, and remember, you know better than I do, but I'm just letting the casuals know, the NBA Finals can't start until June 6th. That is already locked in. When he comes back, and let's say he's close to 75%, somewhere in that range, is he going to give them a bigger lift offensively or defensively?
Oh, that's a good question. I think it's still defensively. As much as Al Horford is doing his best, Porzingis, just by nature, he's a good defender, but just by nature of being 7'3 and long, creates all sorts of rim protection strengths that just having him behind, we've already got Drew Holiday and Dwight and Derek White, the best defensive backcourt in the NBA. Now you've got a 7'3 guy behind them. If you get past them, it just creates real problems. But they would need him, whichever team comes out of the West, whether it's Dallas or Minnesota, they're going to need Porzingis, and they're going to need a lot of Porzingis. I think even with his injury, you've got to, if he can play at all in game four, you've got to get him out there for 20, 25 minutes just to start getting his legs under him, because you and I and every fan out there knows practice isn't the same, man.
All about basketball conditioning. I'm Brian Weber in for Rich Eisen. We're talking hoops with Kurt Heelan. Check out his outstanding work, NBCSports.com. Let's make the move to the West. And you and I are in the content business. Kyrie has been good for business in the past for many of the wrong reasons. That said, and you're in it every day, I can't recall talking about Kyrie once this year related to anything off the court. Do you think he made a conscious decision somewhere along the way to make this season solely about basketball?
That's a good question. I don't know that he would see it that way, but maybe A, this is a really good fit and situation for him. B, maybe it's a maturity thing where he is really just happy in the situation he's in, happy playing with this situation. And it's just, he's comfortable. He's in a good space. So there's no waves to be made. There's not, I don't want to say the Dallas media is soft, but it's, it's different than the New York media he was dealing with in Brooklyn in a lot of ways. I think he's just in a spot, but you're right. He has been, according to everybody I've ever talked to around Dallas, he's been a model citizen. He's been fantastic this year. And that's, you can decide how much you want to bet on that last thing, but it's huge for them.
Yeah, and to me, if we're just going to focus on what's happening on the floor, what a testament to the buy-in from both Kyrie and Luka that it's working as magnificently as it has this year after the struggles they had, small sample size last year. Brian Weber, in for Rich. This is the Rich Eisen Show. We're taking you across the NBA with Kurt Helin of NBC Sports. Kurt, there is so much to appreciate about Anthony Edwards, but he is still just 22 years old, and this is Minnesota's first playoff run as a team. What did you make of him saying after the Game 1 loss to Dallas that the Wolves were tired after seven games against Denver, and what do you expect tonight?
They've got to bounce back. I think you're going to get more energy from them, but, I mean, honestly, he was clearly tired, and he was – 12 of his 16 shots in game one were threes. He's not getting downhill and getting to the rim in that game, which is just a sign of tired legs because his game is getting downhill. He is he plays with, I think when top people use the, I don't love the comparison with Jordan, but I think what you get out of why you go with that is that he plays with that kind of force, right? Like he just wills his way to the spots on the floor in a different way than Luka does or someone else. They've got to bounce back with a better all-around game. I think Towns was the only guy who really seemed there. But I think there is something to the level of conditioning that comes with this. And it wasn't just seven games. It was seven games against a physical Denver team. And the way, Ryan, the NBA is calling games, frankly, since mid-February, the more physicality that's allowed and now a more physical playoffs on top of that, that just takes more out of you. That takes more out of you, and I think this is catching up with some of the guys.
Wait a minute. Are we saying that NBA officiating impacts how games are played, Kurt?
And it's shocking to say.
Tim Donaghy online, too.
I love that the NBA for a long time was like, no, we didn't say anything to these officials about it. And finally, Adam Silver came out and was like, dude, it's pretty obvious if you watch games.
Just be transparent. Let's wrap it up with the big picture. Nuggets, and I got this from your writing at NBCSports.com, losing to Minnesota means we're going to have a new champion for the sixth consecutive season.
Yep.
That hasn't happened, as you wrote, since the late 1970s. Is parity good for the NBA? It works in the NFL, but we seem to love our dynasty in basketball.
Yeah, that's a really great question because I'm more with you. I'm a fan of that in kind of all sports. I like it when, Alabama and Clemson are great in football and everybody's got to aspire to be that. The Warriors with their run or on back through the dynasties in the NBA. And the NBA has certainly been that way. But this is what Adam Silver wanted. This is what obviously small market owners have been pushing for, which is a more flattened talent pool. And we'll see how that impacts everything. It's still a star-driven league. And while LeBron and Curry and Durant are kind of on the downsides of their careers and, nearing the end, there is a crop of the Anthony Edwards of the world coming up. And that Victor Wembanyama guy who's, he's pretty good, coming up. So they've got the crop of stars. I'm not sure that who wins the title is ultimately going to decide the fate of NBA, how many people are watching NBA. And just let me say, as an employee of NBC, I'm hoping those numbers continue to be high for a long time. So,
well, especially if it's the Celtics too, right? We can't talk about, it's a new look NBA when they raise another banner at the Garden. Kurt, always a pleasure. Whip out your calendar, just do it mentally. We're approaching summer fill-in season. That's when guys like me talk a lot of NBA free agency, so hope we can do it again in about a month from now.
I would love to, Brian. Anytime, man.
Thanks, Kurt. Always a pleasure. Kurt Helin, longtime NBA writer, doing a phenomenal job for NBC Sports. And Kurt has been kind enough to join me on the radio now for the better part of a decade. I appreciate him taking the time when he is extraordinarily busy. I'm Brian Weber. It's Kurt Helin, of course, I've only been talking to the guy for 11 years. In for Rich Eisen, 844-204-7424. Hit me up on Twitter, BW Weber, Weber with two Bs. Coming up, going to talk about an extraordinary change happening on campus. College sports will never be the same based on this development. Who are the winners? Who are the losers? That's coming up. I believe my name is Weber. Could be Weber. I have two Bs. Thanks to Kurt Helin, my old, close personal friend. We continue on a Friday installment of the Rich Eisen Show. Back with more after this. We continue on this very busy Friday, and we appreciate the company. I'm Brian Weber, in for Rich and the crew, 844-204-7424. You can be interactive on the X platform. It's BW Weber, Weber with two B's, and I'm back with you on Monday as the fellas enjoy a well-deserved four-day holiday weekend, and then they're back with you on Tuesday with the fallout from everything that's going to happen across a variety of sports. But as we think about Memorial Day, without question, it's the gateway to summer. And summer in my world means grilling. Fire up the grill and get that party going, because we're focusing on the Weber Searwood Pellet Grill. Smoke, roast, and sear all on the same grill. You can go from low and slow on smoke boost mode at just 180 degrees all the way to high heat sear at 600 degrees. It's got a full great sear zone, so you can put more food on the flame. Food will look as good as it tastes. This grill is hot in just 15 minutes. Cleanup could not be easier. You'll cook on two levels at the same time, so you can make enough for everybody. And you can add a heavy-duty rotisserie or rust-resistant griddle insert. Get fired up on your new Weber Searwood Pellet Grill. Full disclosure, that's Weber with one B. I'm Weber with two B's, and if I have the grill money, I might not be working throughout a holiday weekend. Although, we've been a Weber household for decades. I can close my eyes now. Don't do it if you're driving, but I can think of the old man out there with the Weber grill. Steak was his go-to when you could actually afford a steak without getting a second mortgage on your home. Speaking of straight cash, homie, transition almost like I wrote it out, and I will be thoroughly upfront with you. I am a college sports lifer. I am a byproduct of the college sports industrial complex. I went to a fairly good academic school in which nobody wanted to be on the radio. So unlike, say, Syracuse, Missouri, Northwestern, Arizona State, where you have legions of aspiring Rich Eisens, I went to a school where people were inventing Google. I was the only one dumb enough to want to be at the campus radio station, and that was my entree into the industry. So I am extraordinarily passionate about college sports. I am going through the stages of grief because my beloved Pac-12 conference will be moving forward in name only. And good luck to our friends in Corvallis and Pullman as the Pac-2 does its best to survive and reconstitute moving forward. In fact, the Pac-12 baseball tournament will culminate this weekend, and that's the end of the conference on a playing field as we know it. So perhaps I am projecting a bit when I give you my analysis of college sports, but I'm also the guy, over the last 11 years for Pac-12 networks, have called soccer, volleyball, gymnastics, hoops, softball, baseball, water polo, tennis, and I did wrestling on Super Bowl day by myself because I'm a sports courtesan. What I'm about to read to you is about 75 years too late. We're finally officially going to have pay for play in college sports. Now, we effectively moved into this area when name, image, and likeness deals became permissible. But this is different because NIL is a reflection in large part due to popularity. If you're the quarterback, if you're the point guard, if you're the cleanup hitter for a college baseball program, you can get paid, as you should have been all along. And not to be the fill-in guy on my pedestal, nobody, I think, has squandered more education than I have. I'm a great believer in academia. That's why I throw out these big words to feel better about myself after blowing a lot of highfalutin degrees. I understand that the opportunity for student athletes to get a degree not only is life-changing, it's also substantial in terms of the financial investment from the school. That said, it has been a completely one-sided arrangement ever since we went from, hey, college football was fun. Let's watch a couple games on a Saturday. And then it became a billion-dollar enterprise. And I argued, as a student in the late 80s, players should be getting paid in the revenue sports, because show me another walk of life in which those responsible for revenue creation don't participate. But of course, we had the sham of amateurism. That all has changed, thankfully, and now it's going next level. I won't get into the weeds with how this happened on the legal front, but there are a handful of lawsuits that have been working their way through the courts going back to 2016, effectively saying that the NCAA has been violating antitrust laws for the better part of a century. And the NCAA, along with its member conferences, has decided to settle now. Why? Because if they didn't, and they're going to pay out more than $2.7 billion in damages over 10 years as part of this proposed settlement, because if they didn't, and they lost all these lawsuits, they could be on the hook for $10, $15, $20 billion. So, like any rational entity, the NCAA is doing what's in their best interest, along with the conferences. So the money is going to start flowing soon. No firm timetable as of yet. Here's where, unfortunately, the negative trends we've already seen over the last 10 years or so are only going to become reinforced, because it's going to be revenue sharing. Moving forward, about 20% of the money coming from media rights will be available to the players, and we still need the formula and how it's going to be doled out. But just think about that overall metric, 20% of media rights. Well, you don't have to be somebody with a sports media blog or a certified public accountant to be aware that the SEC and the Big Ten are printing money. There's already a massive disparity between those two super conferences and the Big 12 and the ACC, who are hanging on. Think about the ACC as of August, the All Coast Conference. And I'll throw away my alma mater's name here. So I went to Stanford a million years ago. I'm the least successful and influential alum from Palo Alto. My school is joining the ACC because they thought they had no better option because the Big Ten didn't want them. And when I say the Big Ten, I'll be more direct. The Fox Network did not want them. Fox wanted the LA schools. They got it. They wanted Oregon and Washington. They got it. And for now, they're okay with the total. Where are we going to be? 18 schools in the Big Ten, but don't call it the Big 18 because nothing makes sense in college sports. Stanford and Cal, along with SMU, are going to be playing schools, at least for now, with Clemson and Florida State and everybody else in the conference that was originally formed as the Atlantic Coast Conference. How does that make any freaking sense? And most of us, I think, can have a more direct connection to sports like volleyball, soccer, because more people play those sports than big-time college football or basketball. Well, if you're not producing revenue moving forward in this new model, you're going to be in trouble. Now, Title IX will mitigate some of that. And again, I'm getting a little bit too into the legalese here. But the overall takeaway is this. Thank goodness, after way too long of radical inequity, the players are going to get a bigger chunk of the revenue. Cannot endorse that more strongly. Should have been done a long time ago. But my fear is, if we're talking about revenue sharing of media rights, and you're a top-notch running back, although we've devalued the position so much, let's say you're a playmaking wide receiver in this year of the wideouts in the NFL draft. So in addition to your NIL deal, multi-millions potentially available for you, you're going to get a piece of revenue sharing. Wouldn't you go to a school in the Big Ten or the SEC to get more money, because it's 20% of the media rights, than you would have available down a tier at the ACC and Big 12 level. That's just basic math. So the gulf between the haves and have-nots is only going to get bigger, and we know where this is all going. And there's already been talk of this, and this then gets down to the Wall Street guys and private equity. Boring stuff on a Friday. We're going to get to, you pick the number, 40, 50 teams that are part of one super conference. They'll play each other, and they'll keep all the money for themselves. That's it. That's where we're going. And we've already seen foreshadowing of what this looks like because the Pac-12 existed for over a century and the whole thing blew up just to make more money. And I'm a capitalist. That's why I'm going to be working on Memorial Day. But at some point, how much more do you need? And tradition's got to mean something. I'll get off my soapbox now because we have another hour of the program coming up. We'll get back to the NBA. Does Indy have any chance if Halliburton can't go? I'm Brian Weber in for Rich Eisen. It's a Friday on The Rich Eisen Show.
Welcome to Talkville,
the ultimate Smallville rewatch podcast. Guest star Sarah Carter as Alicia Baker. Although I didn't really work with her a lot. But Tom did, and they had some real big smoochy scenes.
Yeah. Should we talk about that?
Could there be any more sex? What was a three-page makeout scene that just kept going? Good Lord! We get it! They have chemistry!
Jump in now or catch up on any of the past seasons of Talkville on YouTube or wherever you listen.